This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This is Everything Elite, presented by MyBookie, the world's best podcast devoted exclusively to all elite wrestling and the elite extended universe. I'm AB. I'm joined, as always, by my good friend, Mike Spears. What's up, Mike?
Hey, y'all. It's your old pal, Iron Mike Spears. I'm really feeling the energy that AB brought in the intro there, so I'm going to keep it up. I am doing pretty all right here. You know, I mean, it's been a week, but you know, everyone's been through a week. But how are you doing, Big Cat?
I'm doing great now. I nailed the intro, you know, so just feeling great. Nate's also here. Nate, were you also, did you also enjoy that Mike said he was going to keep up the energy and then told us he was feeling pretty all right?
Yeah, really enjoyed that. Right off Aaron's one-shot Finch performance there on our intro. Throws it to Mike. Mike's like, yes, I got to follow up this hot energy. I'm doing all right. The week has passed. I continue to exist. Just laying right in the cut there. Just love the interplay that we have here. Very, very natural. And, I'm doing fantastic. How about that? How are you?
All right. You sound like you're doing fantastic. Everybody's
well, I'm
got
lying,
the energy.
Obviously, but for the sake of our fine listeners.
Sure. Well, we love them. So we try to bring them some energy. I'll just hit the plugs up top. Everything AEW is our Twitter account. I'm Aaron Like the Car, at Aaron Like the Car, rather. Nate's at Epitasis. Mike's at Fuji Heya. You can subscribe to the podcast by just searching Everything Elite on the podcast app of your choice. If you use the Apple Podcast app, give us a 5-star rating and a review, please. And of course, if you want to support the show, the best ways to do so are to go to patreon.com/everythingelite and subscribe, or head over to MyBookie and use the promo code ELITE when you make a deposit. Pretty weird here. We have not done 5 to 10 minutes of strange banter up top. But I guess I'll just go right into Elite or Delete. There's doesn't seem to be anything else going on in the world for us to discuss. So
you didn't really give us a lot of oxygen to get a strange banter topic in there, which maybe is you know, an advantageous choice on your part.
Yeah, I'm just going to go with it. Something else will happen in the show that we'll go off on a tangent. So let's just go with it. We're going to talk about this week's episode of AEW Dynamite. I enjoyed it particularly. I'm not sure that everyone did, but I felt like it was a good episode. So we'll see what everybody thought. Nate, my friend, what was your favorite thing? What was your elite pick from this episode?
My elite pick, I'm going to keep it rolling from last week. The highlight of last week, of course, being the big main event between Kenny Omega and Rey Fénix. This week, again, I think the highlight of this show was your main event match. They did Darby Allin in his first TNT title defense up against Brian Cage, as we've talked about on this show. Other than the holding pattern that the addition of Sting represented to this angle, the Darby Allin versus Team Taz thing has been one of the storylines that we've been most invested in. And these guys just were like, okay, yeah, we're going to pay off that story by having Brian Cage absolutely eradicate Darby Allin in this match. Darby Allin excels at selling and really excels at doing a comeback against a larger wrestler. We've seen it with Brian Cage in the past, seen it with your Walters, seen it with your Keith Lees in the history of this podcast. And he did it again. They just had some fucking gnarly spots in this match, made it super, super easy to get invested in, you know, Darby Allin fighting up from underneath and eventually hoisting Brian Cage on his own petard, maybe not on his own petard, maybe on Taz's petard. Hoisted Brian Cage on Taz's petard and pinned him with a top rope crucifix, which, of course, if you're on Twitter, you may have seen that this is a poetic victory for Darby and that the whole feud started here when Taz tried to give him some pointers on the crucifix. I did not notice this because I am not super attentive. And the commentary did not seem to notice it either, although they did give us a pretty good video package earlier in the show to build this match up a little bit. So, yeah, just a great outing for these guys. You know, Brian Cage has some detractors, but I think Brian Cage, this is a big guy who doesn't leave his feet and just powerbombs people like Scott Norton, is a great role for him. So, yeah, this kicked ass.
Yeah, when Brian Cage leans into being a dumb jock wrestler, he really, like, it's his idealized self. Like, it's neat that he's able to do some athletics and stuff like this, but I want to see him yeeting Darby Allin from the ring through the ringside table. Like, that's what I want to see out of this. I want to see Darby do just ridiculous bumps and do coffin drops from the top rope onto the ringside stairs on the other side. And just, this is what the best use for both these guys. Darby is best as the underdog who clings to each match by his fingernails and try not to fall off the cliff of losing. And Brian Cage is a machine. Like, that's one thing we can say for certain, that his catchphrase is accurate on. And, you know, we got some good blood in it, and everything played off in a way that, you know, it does not feel like that this is the end of Team Taz versus Darby and his dad Sting, but it does feel like that this was like an important like stepping stone, especially like how Nate said with the video package that they also had on Road 2. It's some ways that they managed to trip themselves into this great storyline conclusion, in a lot of ways going back to the TNT title tournament initially, where Cody was able to defeat him through wrestling maneuvers, so that was pretty tight. And all in all, you know, I mean, this was a show that had so much stuff going on with it that having a match like this that felt like a legitimate spectacle as the main event really kind of tied a nice bow on it. And it's hard to come away with this match not being impressed.
Yeah, Darby is just so good at this, especially because, and they did a great job with the match, because I definitely could have been convinced, or was convinced early on, that it was possible Brian Cage was just going to beat the shit out of Darby and pin him, and that was going to be the end of the match. So Darby did a great job of selling that. And then, of course, they did, you know, they found a very smart way for Darby to start his comeback. That was great. All the offense that Darby got, you know, made a lot of sense in the context of him wrestling a guy like Brian Cage, which was perfect. They didn't fall into the trap of like, oh, Darby just looks like someone who can't beat Brian Cage, so we're not going to do that. So that was good. I didn't love I loved the finish, because, yeah, you have the crucifix callback, but I didn't love the, like, Ricky Starks kind of gets involved, and then Sting comes, you know, the lights go out, and Sting comes out. No snow for Sting, just for entering, which I thought was disappointing. But it's like, Darby's already up there with him. You can already kind of fall into this this crucifix bomb here and win. But I know they've got this holder thing going on with that, and we're leading to you know, some big match where Sting, I'm sure, is involved. So I get that, but the match itself would have been slightly better if they just done a regular finish.
Yeah, I guess that didn't bother me, just because it was like, oh, hey, Sting's going to do something physical now. That's actually like a step forward and not just doing the same thing. So it benefited, I think, from being a taped show. So it wasn't like we had to wait around for the lights to come back on for, you know, 45 seconds. It was like lights out, lights on, there's Sting, which made it go down smoother, I think.
All right. Mike, your elite pick from this week.
So I thought overall there were some things that I'll get into later that I wasn't probably as high on as the most of people, but one thing that I came into the show with a little bit of trepidation just to see how it would translate, but it ended up just knocking out of the park, was the Dynamite debut of The Waiting Room with Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, her assistant Rebel, and special guest Cody Rhodes. Just across the board, this has become one of the best things on Dark, that they've managed to kind of do a talk show in a way that really brings out the humor and the charisma both of Britt and Rebel. And even though it's kind of funny that I think it's funny because like the reference, but the idea that Rebels doing Ed McMahon laughs in 2021 is kind of wild to think about. Like that's a reference like that is at least 35 years old, but you had Cody with the sparklers and then all of the different, and then Jade Cargill coming out and finally kind of, I guess we're out of this place of what is Cody going to be doing now, which is something that kind of looms large whenever he's not in the program, is what's up with Cody Rhodes. And then Red Velvet gets a larger role, a really decent pull part there. And then, of course, Thunder Rosa from her COVID bunker challenging Britt Baker to beach break. So I thought like that this was a segment that could have failed and it could have been really awkward. And I think these talk show segments have such a high level of difficulty that most pro wrestling talk show segments suck. But this one came off as like a really nice highlight on a show that not all the angles and the out of ring stuff was actually paying off. And I thought like that this was by far the best non-wrestling segment on the show.
Yeah, I liked it. I think the success of this segment and of the segment in general is mostly that just that Britt Baker is really entertaining to watch and really funny, and you know, gets to show her personality in these. I wonder if I had to guess. I think Rebel doing the Ed McMahon laughs, I feel like that's not straight from Ed McMahon. My guess is Tony likes the Larry Sanders Show, and so she's doing Ed McMahon by way of Hank Kingsley. I just feel like Larry Sanders would be in Tony Khan's wheelhouse.
I could see him being that. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Did they ever do a talk show segment on South Park that that ripped from Ed McMahon?
Probably not. I mean, I'm sure they've done 6,000 talk show segments, but yeah.
I just assume that's the only content Tony has ever actually consumed. ECW and South Park.
Yeah. We need Rebel to bust out a hey now, just to confirm Nate's hypothesis there. But there's been talk shows on South Park, but I can't remember one while I was watching that had a Ed McMahon impression.
I'll do our listener elite now. My buddy Rob, who sometimes texts me about AEW, really into the sparklers simulating Cody's entrance. Now, I thought those were particularly good.
Now, does Rob text you about the content of our show as well, or is he just an AEW watcher?
He does sometimes text about the content of our show.
Just wanted to make sure, because you presented it as a listener.
Yes.
Elite.
He is a listener. Let's see. He was texting me something the other day about how I was right about a point.
I'll take it on your word.
I really should have called that out on the show.
We got to hold our friends to account, I think. That's important.
That's true. I was pretty surprised. It seemed like there was some... I just saw people who did not like this segment, and it kind of blew my mind. I just thought it was so entertaining and so good that I can't imagine not liking it.
I did like it, and I also liked that it's like, oh, yeah, no, we didn't forget about Jade Cargill or Red Velvet or their attacks or whatever, because like sometimes you wonder, like, oh, that storyline hasn't been on TV in 2 weeks. I wonder if they literally just forgot. Or, you know, they're disappearing because of COVID. I can also understand a lot happened. It's because it's like, oh, we have to fit, you know, all 12 of our female talents have to be in this one segment because that's all the time they get. So I can understand being like, that was just fucking too much for me.
I mean, yeah, the Britt Thunder Rosa thing was kind of just like tacked on to the end. I wasn't in love with that. But all the stuff with Britt and Rebel and Cody especially was good. And then, yeah, you got the Jade Cargill thing. I love that they are just ignoring what Shaq said when he was actually on the show and just continuing on as if, you know, he and Jade are somehow at odds with Cody.
I respect that. You know, I mean, you're not going to be able to, like, entirely control someone like Shaquille O'Neal. I mean, ask Ernie Johnson about that on Inside the NBA. Like he's just gonna do it like that. So I mean, maybe you just keep on saying no, there's a feud here, and everyone be like, oh yeah, there's a feud here. Shaq has beef with the Rhodes family, and even though that Shaq has on air said I like Cody, but I want to see what happens when Jade faces Brandy, which obviously that's not going to happen unless they're stringing this thing out for another year, which I suspect.
They could. It's a good chance they do.
Beach break 2022.
Well, she was asking for an opponent, so I suspect they're going to at least give her someone to stand in the way before she gets around to facing a post-pregnancy Brandy. All right, time for my elite pick. I'm just going to go with the Dark Order transitioning seamlessly into a babyface unit. They had this little segment this week where it's just like, oh, here's just some fun guys having a good time talking about, you know, dark things, I suppose. I don't know. I don't know how they're going to like work the Dark Order into what they are now, but it's basically like, let's let John Silver just fucking show his ass, do whatever he wants to do. And Evil Uno will kind of be the de facto leader, but Silver is obviously the star, and they're just having a good time. I enjoyed that. Sometimes things fall in your lap. Sometimes in wrestling companies, things fall in their lap and they're like, fuck, we're not doing anything with this. This is not in our plans, but they have done the right thing here with the Dark Order. So good for them.
Just guys being dudes. What's better than that?
Anna. Every time I hear him say Anna like that, dating back to BTE, I corpse almost as much as the Dark Order in that. And it's nice to have, like, remember the concept of hang around TV? Like the idea that you just want to watch something that's pleasant, and like the idea that Friends was the first hang around TV show in a lot of ways. This is a hang around unit. Like they hang out in their clubhouse. They're just joking around. John Silver's just being wild. And then, you know, now we're going to probably have the idea that Hangman Page is going to join them, which I think that was obviously going to be an endpoint regardless, but now it's even more so. And I think that that's the right move for everyone involved. And now we have a pretty exciting looking 8-man tag match next week. That is, you know, we're going to have a good time with the Dark Order. They're cool folks now. And I guess the only time we ever talk about them being a cult is on BTE now.
Well, hey, cults are supposed to be fun. So, I mean, I still think there's a good way to work this back in.
It does make more sense for the cults to be, like, enjoying the benefits of being in a cult than what they do on PT a lot of the time, which is, oh, all the members of the Dark Order actually fucking hate each other, which is, like, the source of a lot of the skits, I guess, which is like, why are you guys together? I don't understand. Anyway.
Yeah, they all seem to hate Alan Angels on BT.
That's like his gimmick. It's like, oh, he's the kicking boy, he's the whipping boy or whatever, which is like, okay, that makes sense for one guy. But then it's also like, no, actually, Anna hates Stu, and Stu hates Silver, and they all just goes in a big, destructive circle of everybody hating each other. But yeah, it makes more sense if it's like, oh, no, actually, you know, John loves Alex and wants Hangman to come hang out with them, and they all will drink with Colt Cabana, etc.
That's supposed to happen later in the cult, you know, where everybody kind of falls apart and starts hating each other.
Yes. So
they can have that story later, you know, but for now, let's just have a good time.
On the point of having that story later, we might touch on that.
Ooh, what a tease. Okay, let's get into the stuff we didn't like from the show. So, Nate, what was your delete pick from this episode?
Well, that won't be my delete pick, because my delete pick will be something that I think is specific to me among the three of us, which is that. So I watch this show, of course, from Belarus on the Fight app. So I don't see the same TNT feed that everybody else gets. But I think there were some clear editing and timing issues with this show. The editing on the Fight stream had a bunch of very jarring jump cuts just ahead in time. And annoyingly maybe happened during the best segments on the show, which were the main event and the waiting room segment. And I have to conclude that this was not, that I saw other people having the same problem. And also the main TV show had a overrun of like 2 minutes. So they obviously went over time, and the Fight stream, I guess they took some steps to correct that by just editing out random chunks of the show is all I can conclude. Cause the Fight stream ended on time at the exact, you know, 9 o'clock hour, whereas the TNT stream seemed to go over by 2 minutes. So, that's my complaint. Is it's very odd jump cuts that, you know, sort of set you out of time. And you're like, what the fuck is going on? Why is all of a sudden a segment from, you know, 3 weeks ago where Britt Baker attacked Thunder Rosa cutting into my Jade Cargill angle? And how did we get here? And now we're back in the arena, and now we're talking to the screen, and just very, very confusing.
And it's something for me that I watch it through YouTube TV. So my feed is usually about 45 seconds to a minute behind everyone else. But so in the Discord, everyone's going like, that's a weird cut. That's a weird cut. And then when it came up there, I was like, yeah, that's kind of odd. And it's something that, and I'm not trying to like just like thread a needle or just like make a mountain out of a molehill here, but a lot of the things that they do for these taped shows, production wise, do not result in a very pleasant viewing and listening experience. For some reason, they always keep the crowd noise super high at the start, and then they pot it down throughout the show. And yeah, some of the editing was kind of loopy with it, and it's something that it seems to be a trend there. So I didn't have as many of like the jump cuts because of that. And interestingly enough, Nate, the official listed time for the show, according to the Nielsen, was still 120 minutes. So there was like this weird thing, but it only counted for 120 minutes. So it's bizarre.
Yeah, it did seem weird because it felt like they were really coming up on the end there. Honestly, I forgot to, or I just didn't notice what time it actually was when the show ended.
I think it was 2 or 3 minutes past the hour, I think.
I remember, I think Chelsea saying in the Discord that it was, I think, scheduled for at least a minute overrun. So,
yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, but I didn't notice as much as you're talking about, Nate, but definitely that Thunder Rosa Britt thing felt just like super, just pushed in there. Very strange. It was just like, oh, we're going to a promo. It's like, oh, we're going right back to Britt without any notice or anything to like tell us what
smash
what
cuts. Just smash cut.
Yes, that's true. But it didn't feel like it was done in like a cool way for effect. It was just like weird. Yeah, it's just you wonder if some of this shit just went too long and they were trying to edit it all together in the end, and this is what we ended up with.
Yeah, I mean the one in the main, there were a couple, I think, even in the main event, but there was one where it was like literally they were in the process of doing some other move, and then suddenly Darby was like, you know, 0.5 seconds away from being chucked through the table at ringside. So it's not any cut that you would intentionally make. It's like, oh no, that's just like they had to cut something out of the show, and I don't know, Fight TV's algorithm pulled out these seconds at random. It was very, very weird.
Very weird. But yeah, the sound drives me insane every taped show. All right, Mike, what was your D-Lead pick from this week?
So they had this, I guess, official overrun that wasn't an overrun. And if you're like trying to find things to edit down, then boy, do I have two matches for you that just went way too long than their purpose. They just kind of went on, especially for what these matches were trying to be. And that was the trios match with Kenny Omega and the Good Brothers versus Danny Limelight. And I didn't catch the other two, but I knew it was Danny Limelight, but they were billed as jobbers.
Blondes.
Oh, it was Varsity Blondes. Yes, my bad. Varsity Blondes. And then the FTR versus Jurassic Express match. It was something that, we, like, the whole entire pacing, Nate, like, building off your point about, like, it feels like they were kind of, like, cutting things like this. It got to a point where it was the traditional 9:38 start of a women's match. And I was like, oh, they're not going to give this match any time whatsoever. I was actually really into the build for this. And then they were able to have a decent match. But it's just, like, timing-wise, like, was there any reason why this trios match should have gone longer than like 4 minute squash? Like, to be honest, like it felt like it went on forever, and it takes down my enjoyment because I felt like the first hour was very well paced, but like everything was happening. And then you had like these two title matches that were supposed to be headlining the show. And then you just had like, I understand I'm probably one of the people who are lowest on FTR. So that's my own personal preference, and that's fine. But it's just like, does this need to be going on this long? It just felt like that got built off like the fact that they had to edit the show somewhat. It just felt like the pacing, at least in the middle half of the show, felt a little suspect in some ways.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to be, you know, there's now, it's basically become a meme now that, you know, Kenny Omega gives his opponents too much, and it's like, oh, he's, you know, should beat Danny Limelight in 2 minutes. I don't really have a problem with working.
Yeah.
You know, a semi-competitive match against an underneath guy, even when you're, you know, the world champion Kenny Omega. But I don't understand doing a match of that length, especially when, you know, the point of this segment is, Kenny Omega and Don Callis, or at least Don Callis, pulled the wool over the Young Bucks' eyes and fucked them over and got them out of this match and plugged in the Good Brothers instead. That's the point of the segment. The point of the segment is not, oh, look how well these teams work against, you know, this jobber team, including a guy who's like, you know, not even to the level of, you know, the Varsity Blondes and Danny Limelight. And it's also very odd to TNA has a pay-per-view this weekend, like, and 90% of the draw for that show is like, hey, Kenny Omega's on this show. You get to see him team with the Good Brothers. And that should be the draw for that show. But they gave that away on this episode. That kind of makes sense to me if you're doing, okay, Kenny Omega and the Good Brothers, they're going to beat this team in 6 minutes. Now you have to tune in on TNA to see him face a competitive team and see like a real match from these guys. That makes sense to me. But they just went and did that again on this television show instead. So that's very strange to me. The FTR one, like, that's kind of fine to me. Like, those are both two pushed acts. Like, FTR is obviously going to be a pushed act in the tag team division. Jungle Boy is obviously a future star. And, like, Marco Stunt, I think we all agree, is like, oh, he's, like, you know, unexpectedly quite entertaining every time out there, and we're always a little bit impressed by him. So, like, I'm fine giving that as much time as you need to. But, yeah, the Trios match, again, you can cut time from almost all of these matches.
Did they even do a sell on the Hard to Kill pay-per-view?
Not that I noticed.
They did during Kenny's ring entrance.
That's right.
It's like, shouldn't Don Callis, I mean, if we're imagining this as like a business deal, you know, shouldn't Don Callis get on the mic and say, by the way, you can see this team on pay-per-view this Sunday or whatever the fuck it is?
Yeah, I do. Like, I almost pity TNA about it a little bit because, like, Tony goes on their show and buries them hard. The Tonys go on TNA and they are stiff. And then it, like, don't return the favor on Dynamite whatsoever, which is funny. But, you know, it's almost like they're, like, the heel half of this promotional exchange.
And maybe they're taking some of their talent, which I guess we'll hear about in the near future.
Dot, ellipsis.
I'll go by delete from that one, which you're right, Nate. The point of that was that Don Callis pulled the wool over the eyes of the Young Bucks. But it's like real fucking annoying to me for AEW to have another whose side are they on angle. And now we're seeing another whose side are they on angle with the Young Bucks, which is like, Jesus Christ, can we just, you know, they came out, I think Swarles mentioned this in the Discord, they came out last week and they just joined up with their buddies and did the two sweet, and it's like, oh, that's satisfying, you know, it just kind of happened.
Hey, it's the famous hand sign.
I'm sorry, the famous hand sign, I apologize. And now it's like, oh, wait, actually, what if we drag out for like a month of TV who the Young Bucks are actually behind here? And I'm starting to realize that's like, This is the only thing the Young Bucks and Kenny know how to book, right? It's like some drawn out story about who likes who.
Well, I don't want to put all the blame on them because it might be the only story that anybody knows how to book. Because so they're doing that. The Young Bucks and Kenny Omega just did this whole thing with Adam Page in the Elite. Adam Page finally leaves the Elite, and the next story he goes to is, hey, is he going to join this the Dark Order now? Is he friends with these guys, or is he not friends with these guys? Is he in the stable, or is he out of the stable? We can't tell. The other fucking big story in this promotion is, hey, the Inner Circle, they added these guys. Hey, are they friends? Are they going to get along? Are we going to break the stable apart? It's just every – it seems like the only – okay, that's maybe overstated. A significant proportion of the stories in this promotion are like joining a stable, discord within the stable, and then leaving a stable. And it's just a lot of the same notes being played over and over again. Like we talked, you know, just like that thing with the Young Bucks, I said, oh, you know, I'm happy that the MJF and Jericho storyline is like moving along at this pace. Like it seems to be moving along pretty quickly. We're not just going to drag it out. But now we're at like week four of them being like, oh no, actually they're all cool with MJF. Actually, no, we're not cool with MJF anymore. Oh, now we're not cool with Hager. Actually, we are cool with Hager now. And it just, yeah, just week after week.
And it's something where like, we're to a point now that let's track, the Young Bucks last year. So they won this match to get into Revolution, where the whole idea was that leading up to this match was that Adam Page wanted to be his own guy, but then he starts teaming with someone who was in his former stable. And then there was all this discord because then FTR was here. And then are they friends of FTR or are they not friends of FTR? It seems like they were friends of FTR for a little bit there. And then they then eventually have a feud with FTR over the titles that eventually they're not friends. And then during that show, Kenny Omega storms off after losing the title and then they win the titles. And it's just like at a certain point, I was very happy to see the Lucha Brothers come out here because I'm like, okay, we've had all of this over the last 16 months that I'm ready for them to go back to Lucha Brothers versus Young Bucks because that was a match because that was a series about guys who was just seeing who was the best tag team on the planet, and that's a storyline that if you're going to repeat who is the best on the planet, you can repeat that because people should have like a claim of saying you right now are the champions. It means you're best. We think we're best, so we're going to go for the titles there. So, and then you like parallel that with the Inner Circle. Wasn't it supposed to be that like the last time? Like when they had like that big intervention or town hall thing, that was like the next time there was anything that was any discord, the Inner Circle was done. Didn't Sammy say that? Like, shouldn't this be like, oh, we're done now because of that? Like, so that's going back on something not even a month ago.
Yeah, Sammy is the only one who like seems like the voice of reason or seems like the voice of the audience, and saves like half of these Inner Circle segments through his performance. The same thing here, where he's just like his dialogue. And his jokes were like the only thing that made the Inner Circle segment watchable to me. So, yeah, that totally, you know, they just skipped over that, I guess.
Yeah, you guys are right that that is a common problem within the promotion in general. I was just thinking about how, like, oh, the Young Bucks and Kenny did, like, all the shit with Ibushi, you know, and, like, all the Bullet Club. Like, who's in Bullet Club and whose side? And it's like, okay, you're kind of repeating the same story again, I think. But here we are. Listener delay for the week. Listener Rawl is deleting the Judas sing-along. I feel like there's a lot of backlash now. I think the Judas sing-along has maybe overstayed its welcome, at least with a certain type of fan.
Well, yeah. You know, Jericho in general has overstayed his welcome. I deleted Jericho last week. Rawl's dead on that the Judas meme is tired. The Judas thing would work fine and be like, oh, this is actually still cool and still organic and natural if we had full crowds, but we haven't had full crowds for like, I don't know, 9 months or something. So it just feels more manufactured and WWE like. It feels like WWE, remember when they tried to get Fandangoing over because the Raw after WrestleMania people danced for Fandango, and then whenever Fandango would of course create Jericho rival Fandango, whenever he would enter, they'd like try and make people dance and like tape them. That's what the Judas sing-along feels like now. And that's what you have to stay away from. Like, just stop going back to the well on Chris Jericho in general.
And there's something about this I want to ask y'all a question because I wasn't very clear about this. Is it something that like that Jericho is like having them replay the chorus if he doesn't think the crowd's cheering loud enough or singing around long enough? Like, I heard that was something that was happening.
Like, that's not happening on TV. I don't, maybe it's happening during the tapings.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's being translated to TV. It just feels, you know, they're playing the fucking tape and Jericho's like looking to the crowd expectingly, and it's just very corny.
And it's something that with Jericho and Jericho's history of getting stuff over, it's not that like he has an inability to get things over when it's over. Like, the whole like part of his charisma dating back since WCW is that he'll do something funny that the crowd grasps onto and it'll get over almost to the point that Jericho is tired of it being over, like the list of Jericho thing. So it's just a bad read on someone that, you know, as you said, Nate, Jericho is, you know, him with COVID and everything, Jericho just like being around at this point just is becoming an active detriment to the shows more so than being a benefit.
Yeah, he's too cooked to know that it's past its time, basically.
And there's nobody to get it over with.
I mean, it's yeah. Like, it's fucking...
Who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
Right. And also, and this is like the Jericho thing too, of Jericho, it would be nice if he'd gone away for a while and he comes back and you're like, oh, it's Jericho. If this kind of went away, then maybe the first time there's a crowd, they sing along and it's like, oh yeah, that was fun when that used to happen.
Yeah.
But we get to cheer, we get to sing along now. Yeah. Like,
yeah. If it felt organic and you missed it a little bit, Now, right. You know, I don't know if we're ever going to get crowds back, but if we do.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's going to happen. I'm going to be fucking annoyed about it. Be like, yeah. This whole crowd is, you know, 6 months behind the times because they're still doing this Judas thing. Don't they know it's played out?
Yeah, and absence makes the heart fonder, Chris Jericho. In a lot of ways, absence makes the heart fonder.
Well, the absence of, you know, the NHL maybe was making your heart grow fonder for hockey. Perhaps the absence right now, the absence of some NBA games because of COVID is perhaps making your heart grow fonder. So if you're feeling really fond, why don't you head over to MyBookie? It's the time of year when divisions are decided, champions are crowned, and legends are born. That's right. It's time for the NFL playoffs. So make sure you're getting in on that. I don't watch a lot of NFL, so hard for me to get in on that. I have been wrenching, I'm not sure if that's the word I want to use, the only joy I can out of this shitty Kentucky basketball season by the fact that the bookies cannot figure them out, and I have just a little bit better understanding than they do of this team. We go on a 3-0 win streak, and then Kentucky was favored by 3.5 at Alabama, or at Kentucky, but playing Alabama. And I knew they would shit the bed, and they did. So, you know, daddy gets paid. That's really all that matters.
And you know that there is big NFL news, as someone is now all elite today.
That's right.
And sadly, I did not get up on, like, I did not see a prop bet on betting that former several-time national champion Urban Meyer would be the new head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. So that'll be an interesting thing. And I wonder if I can get a prop bet on how long until he gets too miserable that he quits the job. But it's weird because also with like everything starting up, like League of Legends is going to start up, and it's such a mess right now, at least esports wise, that they've had to redo everything. And like half of the teams are like stuck in their own country and they can't actually get on the right server to play. So You like look at like how odds makers haven't necessarily figured it out. I'm done betting on the University of Miami Hurricanes this year. They are just a bad team. There's no enjoyment for me working the figures like you're able to, AB. So I look towards esports, and esports, you know, it's going to be a hard thing to figure out this year.
Just make sure you're using that promo code ELITE to get your deposit match up to $1,000. Whether you're at home or on the go, on your laptop or your phone, it's not too late to make your New Year's resolution a resolution to get paid, baby. My bookie promo code ELITE.
Really popped yourself there.
Well, you were surprised by my
that's true. I was surprised.
Injection of energy, and that's what popped me.
Our bookie is the only like profession or service where they advertise like how bad they are at their jobs. It's like, we are so bad at setting the lines. You can come and take advantage of us. We're very dumb.
I mean, car salesman saying you get so much money off your next car, like the crazy used car salesman.
Yeah, that seems just like it's just like dishonest, though, right? Like that's
fair.
We're lying. You know, we're you're ripping us off by taking these cars. Mm-hmm. I don't think, you know, that's maybe like hyperbole, but not actually. Yeah, that is the same energy, though, for sure.
Yeah, but I mean, well, bookies are the only one where it's like they have to be bad at their job for you to win.
Yeah.
Or like there was this really interesting article that came out on Slate a couple weeks back about the Slate U.S. pitch. Election. Sorry?
Slate pitch. Sorry, it was a bad Twitter joke.
I didn't. Oh, Slate pitch. Yeah, no. Like this was a successful one It was Alex Kirshner, who's a college football writer and talks about sports betting, talking to bookies about the election and how they had to constantly change the odds, if only because there was so much action, if not outside of reality. And a lot of people are like trying to file lawsuits because how much money was given on was bet on the Trump side out of like certainty of that. It's like, hey, we had to like work the numbers to actually make it make sense. But in reality, because of the amount of action, it should have been reflected of this much, and it should have been even more of it. And it's something that it's like the sports books made an insane. They said it was like the biggest day for most of the sports books in their history was election day because of all the Trump prop bets.
Yeah, but it was fucking dumb because they ended up, you know, going to where Biden was the big underdog, you know, as the night went on. And it's like, shouldn't they have just kept pumping up the Trump odds? Because the people were, those people are going to bet on Trump fucking regardless because they're dumb.
And that was the problem. That was the problem, was like the odds that they had to keep it in some realm of like, this is what like the actual like Dan Wassermans were saying.
Like, maybe I should read the article. Maybe, you know, it's just like the Twitter thing. Do you want to read this article before you retweet it? Maybe I should.
I got one of those yesterday, but there was a helpful screen cap from the part of the article that I thought was relevant. And I'm like, no, Twitter, because this guy posted the only part of this article I intend to read. So the article is now useless to me because I got these three sentences and a ping.
It's like, no, I would have clicked the article if I wanted to read the article first. I want to retweet whatever this point is.
I'll just say the reading situation online has gotten untenable, because even with an ad block, like, it's almost impossible to find any article to read between paywalls, and the fucking the ad situation on a mobile phone is unbearable. As I say this, Rich Craig is cutting in an ad to go right into my line of dialogue if I'm speaking. That's going to cut me off. But I just so our listeners know, I also find ads annoying.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's something also that it's like, I don't know, maybe I view information as almost like a public utility in a way that I'm like, yes, that there is like the unenviable thing, like Washington Post and New York Times trying to, like, no one buys a physical newspaper now, so how do they derive any sort of revenue to keep the newspaper afloat? But at the same time, it's like, if you're going to like have like some news that should be a public utility behind a paywall, then that's just bad. Like, it's just atrocious.
Well, it's like, first of all, your newspapers fucking suck. New York Times, Washington Post. So I don't really care.
But it's owned, like, you know, owned by billionaires who never need another dollar in their lives anyway.
True. And you know, it just brings to mind the goodness, the quality, the value of state-run media. This should just go full state-run
here, here.
Media.
Hard never cosign. Or, yeah, we should nationalize the Epoch Times, and that should be our national source of news.
Apparently, the Epoch Times has, like, become, like to a level I did not understand, like, how big they've become, because...
Oh, yeah, because there's no paywall, and it's where all the right-wing disinformation on Facebook gets shed around and then gets, you know, basically endorsed by Trump. So yeah, it's like, you know, you know, it's like, I don't know about Fox News level, but it's certainly like Newsmax level.
Maybe it is that, like, in my part of the Southeast, the news already has a certain slant to begin with. So there's like no big pathway for them in South Carolina. But like, hearing that the Epoch Times is like now one of the most like highly trafficked news sources, if you want to call it a news source, just blew my mind when I discovered that.
Yeah, everything's great. Everything's going well.
and we thought we'd have a fun tangent this week.
Like I said, I'm doing fantastic.
I use lists a lot on Twitter. Like, that's the way that I mostly consume Twitter, I would say. And I had a list of, like, you know, Kentucky politics, but the legislature just started and it was so fucking miserable because the Republicans in the Kentucky State Senate has 100 seats and Republicans have 75. So they can do anything they want. And we have a Democratic governor, but they can override a veto with a simple majority.
It's only a simple majority override? That's...
Yeah. And well, I don't know if you guys know that
what's
we're
the point? What's the even point of that? If
did you
have to pass with a simple majority in the first place?
Yes.
I mean, like, that was always a thing growing up in Texas. It was such a monoculture state as well that, like, a lot of the Democrats that were from Dallas or Austin or Houston or San Antonio, never Fort Worth, by the way, but they were like, well, we are here and we're trying to be some sort of resistance, but we just kind of exist here and we're just kind of, like, saying things we were supposed to say and we believe in these things. But we know it doesn't matter. And I'm like, that is a quick way, I think, for someone to really, like, if you're the, if you have a certain mind, to really just get depressed real quick.
Well, on the bright side, it doesn't really matter anyway, because we talked on this show about the law that California passed that was, like, you know, changing their guidelines for independent contractors, which could theoretically mean that WWE would no longer be able to classify the wrestlers as independent contractors in that state. But no worries, because the resolution, that's not the word, is it? The public resolution?
Prop 22.
The right. Prop? That's a resolution, yeah. Right?
Proposal.
Proposition. Yeah, so that passed, which means they were, you know, the public was happy to get rid of that law. And then the Democrats were just pleased as punch about it and, you know, endorsing all the lawyers that wrote the law and advocated it, the resolution rather, and advocated it. So yeah, you know, even if you have a Democratic majority state like California, you still don't actually get any progressive legislation passed.
Yeah, I have thought about that over the years of, like, you know, there's been times when I thought, oh, should I move to, like, a more progressive state? You know, and then you realize that, like, yeah, they don't do shit that's worth anything in those states either. It's like, it's just a miserable country, right? It's like, if you live here, it's just bad.
Got the cost of living difference of, like, yeah. That happens, that more often than not, the more progressive states are ones with a much higher cost of living. And you're just like, what's it matter? I'm just going to amuse myself to death one way or the other. I might as well do it where I can amuse myself more and not have to pay a crazy rent.
The only way it ever works, Nate, is that sometimes they'll pass a bunch of shit right at the end. And then if the governor vetoes it, they don't have enough time to, because the Kentucky legislature is part-time. It can only be in session for so many days per year.
Yeah, I wouldn't want, you know, the state government paying out any salaries to anyone.
Right. So sometimes they run out of time. But the first thing they did this year was, of course, try to pass something to stop the governor from being able to do anything about the pandemic. So, yeah. So it's, you know. Anyway, the point of that was delete my list because I was like, I can't fucking deal with this stuff. I just don't care about this.
That's, you know, what level of information penetration is it actually helping you and making you have an informed choice or do anything constructive? Like, certainly not that much information.
No, it's like, okay, if this state is just completely controlled by arch conservatives, like, what could me knowing about it possibly do? I mean, like, okay.
You know, right. Rattle ties you to pick up a gun, then maybe.
I already have guns, folks, so it's fine. All right, so speaking of guns, AEW went pew-pew in the ratings this week. Up.
Yeah.
100,000.
That's right, folks. That means up.
I'm going to get a soundboard, and I'm going to pull your pew-pew and use it for whenever you're shooting, I guess.
Thank you. They're up to 762,000. Honestly, a strong performance against impeachment number two. I guess nobody gave a shit about the impeachment. 31st in the demo with a 0.30. NXT went drip, drop, drip down again.
Droop, droop, droop. I'm going to provide, like, the actual sound effects with my mouth that you were trying to make. So
no, I was trying to go drip, drop, drip.
Well, you know, it's common knowledge that the opposite of a gunshot is a drip, is a water fountain, is a water faucet dripping. So
yeah, I think they were making it. It's keeping your faucet at a level just so the pipes don't freeze. That's right.
Yeah, instead of droop. So 551,000 down from 641, 70th in the demo with a 0.14, down from a 0.16. Listeners, if you've ever wondered what the instant reaction shows are after the pay-per-views on the Patreon, this is what they're like. Me losing my mind because I need to be in bed instead.
Yeah, so same situation as last week. Next week's the inauguration. Don't expect some big, like, jump to 900,000 viewers from AEW or going much higher in the ratings. Other things of note, I mean, they held up better. So, I mean, that's good. Maybe it's that everyone's like, the impeachment happened. No reason for us to keep it on the news now. We know what's happening right now. I mean, that's just my own rationalization. Worth noting was that NHL had opening day yesterday, and they did exceedingly well, but it's hockey, so I expect the ratings to drop like a rock soon after. And, yeah, I mean, We'll do this again next week, Aaron. Maybe we'll have more sound effects for it.
No, it has to be organic or it won't work.
I like my drop noise more than you. Nate, which drop noise you like more? Aaron, do yours first and I'll do mine.
Drip, drop, drip.
Yeah.
All right.
Aaron's is better because it's so much worse.
Okay. So I actually have like a somewhat realistic like. Like,
I mean, that's actually all not good, Mike, but Aaron's is like,
I was doing better. I was doing better when I was not on the spot. Okay, I'm done. I'm done.
On your own faucet.
Yeah. I'm real dumb, everyone, and I promise that I will always try, but I'm still going to be real dumb at the end of the day.
You respect it, Mike.
I'm smart.
I'm somewhere in the middle, I think. Okay. We opened up with a Pac and Eddie Kingston hype video that led right into Pac defeating Eddie Kingston with the Black Arrow. Immediately after the match, Pac locked in the Brutalizer. We had a face-off between Death Triangle and Butcher and Blade. Lance Archer came out, cleared the ring, but then for some reason he was mad at Pac because somebody is not on the same page.
This was a good match, but if you wanted to complain that the whole Death Triangle, Eddie Kingston, Butcher and the Blade story is about people joining and then breaking up a stable, just like all the other stories, I don't think you're wrong.
Yeah, this match rocked. I liked how they kind of Pac came in and didn't work this. He worked this more babyface, which is notable because he still came out in the heel tunnel, and it was noticed that like Pac, instead of like going and focusing on punishing Eddie, it's like, I'm going to beat you first and then I'm going to try to punish you. And I thought that was a really smart move and a fake sport where people are usually real dumb.
Okay, but isn't that a heel thing? Like, I don't understand Pac's alignment at this point.
He's a heel, but he's a babyface against Eddie Kingston.
Yeah. Yeah. He's still a bastard. Yeah, I mean,
he's by nature a bastard.
He's the bastard.
Mm-hmm. It's something where like you can have these matchups and sometimes it's hard to do heel versus heel, but it's kind of worked there.
Yeah, you don't have to think about it. He's by nature a bastard, but he's a babyface in the storyline because of Eddie, you know, stealing his guys.
Wait, I have to think about these things. We talk about
we've already talked about it for too much. I'm getting upset.
Okay, but let me put this to you. Oh, is so We're ending up right in a Kenny, the Good Brothers, and somebody else in a War Games match against a Mox-led face team, right?
I don't know that.
I think that's where we're going.
Maybe.
So, I mean, is it because it's going to be Mox and Pac and Archer and Death Triangle?
No. That doesn't seem likely to me at all.
I think it is.
Right, no, I mean, yeah, they did not really make a whole lot of sense out of Phoenix and Pentagon coming out later. The Young Bucks have to be involved in the match on one side or the other, and it doesn't seem like they're likely to be on the Good Brothers side. So
who knows? We'll find out fucking 13 weeks from now.
I regret digging into this. As I knew I would.
Miro defeated Chuck Taylor with the game over. Chuck must now be Miro's butler. That's it.
Why did they change it to butler?
I guess they thought young boy maybe was going to sound weird to the majority of listeners. Watchers?
Yeah.
Viewers?
The butler thing has more, like they've done that before in Western wrestling, whereas the whole concept of a young boy, young lion, however you want to call it, kind of is weird, I would think, to people who aren't familiar with it. So it makes sense. Plus, Chuck Taylor gets to wear a tuxedo. That's one for everyone.
It's a rib on Chuck because of Jimmy Butler.
Oh, good point. Good point. Yeah.
If this were WWE, that would definitely be the answer. But I can't say here.
That does suggest that maybe Tony Khan does not only watch South Park and has watched, what was it, the first episode of Seinfeld? Wait, was that the first episode, or was that the pilot on the show within a show? Maybe it was both.
You mean the Jerry show? Wasn't it called Jerry? The pilot, the show within a show?
Yeah.
All
right. Moving on.
Good match. Miro looked good.
All the wrestling was good on this show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dasha is with Private Party and Matt Hardy. They're arguing about the 30% that they agreed to last week. Mark Quinn called Matt a money grabbing carny. I'm sorry. And Hardy says he's the only one who cares about them, so they should shut up and listen to him. This made me so mad because they literally last week talked about the fact that it was 30% out loud on television for everyone to hear. And now they're acting like they didn't know it was in the contract. It's just very dumb. This is bad. All right. I'll accept your.
No,
it's not, you know, the outline, like the whole Hardy storyline, the Hardy character idea is good. The storyline idea is good. The execution and the pace and the, you know, little vignettes that they're doing about it are overexposed and not playing to their strengths. They, you know, they just turned him heel on a dime, and then it's like, okay, now he's going to be a heel, and we're going to get to the point of this contract, and we're going to do it in vignettes on Dynamite that aren't as good as the Private Party vignettes on Sammy Guevara vlog. So, yeah.
Inner Circle came out. Everyone is giving their New Year's resolutions, except Wardlow, which was noted on Twitter today.
Very disappointing.
Yes,
very disappointing.
To improve. What are you going to improve on fucking Wardlow?
That's true.
Maybe he wants to get a hobby. Who knows?
Maybe. Jericho says his resolution is that he and MJF are going to win the tag titles. This makes Santana mad because Jericho handpicked he and Ortiz to be the tag team in the Inner Circle. Sammy calls Jericho a tag team slut, which leads to bickering among the Inner Circle. And Jericho, to solve this, suggests a three-way tag to determine the Inner Circle tag team. Jericho and MJF versus Santana and Ortiz versus Sammy and Jake Hager. This leads to a Sammy Hager bit. The Dark Order is with Alex Marvez. We talked about this. Dark Order, they're baby faces now. Best part of this was Silver doing, he's in! We got Hangman!
He's so good. Like, it's something that you didn't necessarily think that, like, that energy would work on TV, but I'm glad that they're just letting him just be the meat man on TV. It rocks.
They did the Darby Cage hype video here in the middle, which I thought was good, as they kind of around the 9 o'clock hour. Then we saw Dasha backstage with Kenny Omega and the Bucks. They're talking about, you know, doing their big match here in a little bit. Don Callis suggests that the Bucks do their own entrance, so we know that shenanigans are afoot. Don Callis is in the ring after Kenny's entrance. He says he wants to introduce the Bucks himself. He says, the world tag team champions and Kenny's two best friends, the Good Brothers. And Machine Gun Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows come out. And then we see the Young Bucks inset backstage, standing there with Tony Khan and Dasha. And they do not look happy.
I called it. That's all I gotta say. I called it.
He did. I will say that on Light, Mike suggested that because they were being cagey about the Elite and not saying that it was going to be Omega and the Bucks, that this is what was going to happen. And it did.
Andrew T. Rich, I saw, called it on Main, not on a paywalled show. So I got to give it to him.
I mean, you could hear my shots, though. Free. Yeah, he put it out for free. I monetized it.
Kenny Omega and the Good Brothers.
You know, we're going to talk about the broken information economy in this country.
Yeah, no. I look like a horse ass right now. I apologize.
Wait. Again, as I said, do not talk down about our Patreon on our fucking show, man. We want people to subscribe to the Patreon.
Yeah. Subscribe to the Patreon, and you can hear me call my shot sometimes and other things. There were other things that are mentioned on Dark or on Light that we talked about yesterday.
That's right, baby.
Other things were mentioned, people.
God damn it. Kenny Omega and the Good Brothers defeated the Varsity Blondes and Danny Limelight. Anderson pinned Limelight after the Magic Killer. Afterwards, Mox came out. Omega and the Good Brothers attacked him. The Lucha Bros made the save. This is why I have my theory, Nate. Mox is getting the best of Omega. The locker room clears out to break him up. Mox gives the paradigm shift to a jobber, then dives onto everybody. The Bucks come out to try to convince Mox that they're cool, but then the Lucha Brothers super kick the Bucks. Everybody brawls. Omega walks away.
Yeah, no, I understood that's why you had your theory. That was not surprising to me. That made sense.
I'm gonna send you to the broken information system in this country.
Devastating.
The Waiting Room was up next. We talked about that. FTR defeated Jungle Boy and Marco Stunt. Cash pinned Marco after the big rig. I think we already discussed that. Also, the NWA Women's World Title. Serena Deeb defeated Ty Conti with the Detox. I saw some people referring to it as the Deeb Tox.
Yeah.
Which do you think it is?
I assumed that it was Detox when I heard it, and I was like, oh, that's an interesting choice, because like I think she famously had some substance dependency issues.
Yes.
So it's like, oh wow, she took that and incorporated that into her character. That's an interesting choice. It would be very pro wrestling to have a stupid pun as your finisher name, so I could believe Detox. This was a good match. I think the advantage of the women's matches in this company, and particularly, you know, the better ones with Serena Deeb or the ones with Ty Conti, is they have different styles than the rest of the roster in a lot of ways. Like Ty Conti's, judo stuff is like pretty fresh compared to all the other matches you see, because a lot of the men's matches come from the school of like, your PWG style, house style, I suppose. The women's matches always hold my attention a little bit more than the rest, because it's like, oh, there's going to be some sort of different vibe to this match. There's going to be some sort of, you know, transition into a heel hook that just like they don't do other places on the card.
And it's something that it's nice seeing Ty's moveset and wrestling style develop the way it has over, I guess, now the last 6 months. And then you have someone like Serena Deeb has such like a grounded grappling style, and it gives you a little bit more variety, and something that I always kind of look forward to whenever I see these two on the show. And you know, they came together and had a great match, and it was something that I would like to have seen a little bit more of the match. Still, I would have loved to see this thing. I know it went through one commercial break, but give it time and see how Ty Conti is improving and showcase Serena Deeb.
Yeah, Ty rules. No clue. As we also talked about on Light, no clue what's going on with the NWA generally, so I wasn't really sure where this title would go. But yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it. The main event, TNT title, Darby Allin defeated Brian Cage to retain. This was his first defense of the title, the crucifix bomb from the top rope. Afterwards, Team Taz came out and helped Cage out, you know, with after the Sting involvement. And that was your show. So a good little show, I thought. All right, if you want to support this good little show, you can head over to patreon.com/everythingelite. This week, a very fun show with Mike Spears and Drew Spears talking about the Nightmare Factory produce show. I think I have 4 minutes left of the episode, but it's been a great joy so far.
I didn't get to ask you on air, what are your thoughts about the best mic worker in 2021, Abraham Storm, the landlord, the best fighter on the earth?
I gotta say, I actually think the promo is good.
Do you think it's actually good, or do you think it's so funny that it's good?
No, I think I'm like, this guy is a good promo. Like, obviously it's bad, but it's like, this guy has presence. He's got a nice voice. He is confident in what he's saying. It's like, this guy could be a really good promo. Yes, he absolutely had like 8 ideas and just decided to do them all. You know, that happens sometimes. So, you know, that's fine. He's probably needs some editing. Somebody should have worked with him a little on the promo. The classic, I saw Cody say this week, sometimes the shit on our show is all the same because we have so much freedom. And it's like, just fucking talk about it before the show. How hard is that? Lay it out. So yeah, I think Cody also maybe should have talked to Abraham Washington and let him work on this. But I think he's a good promo.
It was a fun show. If you all haven't checked out this, the Nightmare Factory, for our first big student camp, they had a produce show that they put out a couple weeks ago, and me and Drew got a chance to talk about it. It's a few things that uniquely both Drew and I like is talking about rookie wrestling and people coming along there. And, you know, we also got to see, I think I know who all the car ideas come from, by the way. I think it's Cody Rhodes, because there was a car entrance on the show. And we got Glacier as a commentary, which has to be hard to believe.
Yeah, I heard that was bad. Well, and I heard that from listening to this episode.
Aaron, I must ask you at this time, how much sleep did you get last night? Because we
like 8 hours. I don't know what's going on with me. I'm losing it. And I just drank an A&W root beer. So, well, that's caffeine free, though. So,
did you say AEW root beer?
You guys know that A&W has the website rootbeer.com.
how does AEW needs the A&W sponsorship for sure?
Oh, that would be great.
Absolutely.
If you look at it, I'm going to put it up to the camera here for you guys. The ampersand kind of looks like an E in the A&W logo.
Yeah, could be like a.
I drink A&W diet root beer. I'm aware of the ampersand and their logo. I've been to A&W restaurants in Canada.
Yeah, Aaron.
Come on. Sorry. Come on.
Respect his knowledge.
Well, I do have to defer to Mike because it was a double mic audio week, as he also gave us the Go Big Show Good Time Jamboree.
I like trash TV, and I will continue. People seem to like this. I do a short recap of the Go Big Show. After we're done recording, I'm going to sit down and watch people. Like, apparently there's someone who's going to walk across a gator pit today, which is very thrilling and very Florida core. So it's to my heart. So, yeah, check it out. It's like 10 minutes. It's fun.
We also, of course, did the light show that we've been talking about, which we do every week. And next week, Nate and, I don't know, a special guest, maybe? I have no idea. Into the Codyverse episode, breaking down Impact's Hard to Kill pay-per-view. Are you excited about the Hard to Kill card? I saw it today.
Well, like I complained earlier, I was mostly excited to see, you know, Kenny Omega and the Good Brothers teaming together. And they just gave this away on this television show. So I'm going to have to, I think, talk myself into getting hyped for Ethan Page versus the Karate Man, and I don't know whatever else is happening. Sami Callihan, whatever he's doing, gonna get myself up on that. So yeah, might have a guest, may not. Gonna leave it to the 11th hour. So you know, stay tuned.
Yeah, more good stuff coming the rest of the month. And if you join up, go join our Discord. It's very easy to do. There's a post on the Patreon about how to set it up. But I think if you're already on Discord, it'll just automatically kick you in there. So that's patreon.com/everythingelite. Go subscribe. Next week on Dynamite, we have Negative One's birthday present, Hangman Page and Dark Order versus the Chaos Project and TH2. Is Negative One a big Luther fan? Because that would bring me a lot of joy.
One would hope. I mean, he is the most symmetrical man in wrestling.
We also have Nyla Rose versus Layla Hirsch, and I believe Chelsea dropped in the Discord that Layla Hirsch now has a heels account, so that points strongly toward the idea that she's been signed. And right after Chelsea said that, well, we got this match announced, so that's exciting. I also, speaking of great content, Hikaru Shida, the Shida Tube, did you watch this, Nate? She did Keiko trying to teach her how to do the Kenny Omega dance. It's a great video.
I did not watch it. I did retweet it. I did not watch it.
Well, it's 18 minutes long.
Yeah.
It's 18 minutes.
Yeah. It's like all of Keiko trying to teach her the dance.
Yeah, I don't know. Don't know if I can get behind that. Now, are they speaking to each other in Japanese, or what's the situation there?
Almost exclusively in Japanese. Occasionally, there is a caption that Shida has put on there.
Okay.
Sometimes they speak in English. But it's still, I mean, it's delightful still. I watched all 18 minutes and 22 seconds.
Yeah. Well, I won't be watching. But I'm going to support the Shida Tube, folks.
What I did learn.
Go support Keiko's Amazon wish list.
That's right.
I don't know Twitter.
She is a friend of the show, so absolutely.
We should make a Patreon tier where if enough people subscribe to it, we'll buy like the Apple Watch off of Keiko's.
For sure. It's like the opposite of a FinDom stretch tier. It's like a simping stretch tier.
And there's a great card on there where when Shida introduces Keiko and it says Keiko Honda, the owner of cool abs. but I learned on this while Shida's trying to learn the dance that Shida has an injured ankle.
Oh. Scoop.
Yeah, scoop. Big scoop from Shida Tube. She's doing a part where she has to like stand on one leg and she's like makes a painful sound. And then there's a caption that's like, I have an injured ankle or something like
that. I'm imagining you like going to your Japanese tutor and just pulling up this video and be like, can you tell me what they say?
I watched this at like 11:45 last night, which you all know is like too late for me to be watching to do anything.
We could have done the show by that time.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, we could have. We probably should. We should just do this show right after the show. But I was watching it at like 11:45 and I thought, should I text this to my Japanese teacher? Would she enjoy this? And luckily I came to my senses before I did it.
Is this something that you do with nearly everything now? Is you like, do I think that my Japanese tutor would enjoy this interaction where my student is sending me clips of things and he's trying to understand more? Like is that your thought process here? I'm not trying to demean you. I'm just trying to understand.
No, yeah. What I do is I try to keep a list of things like that I've seen that I think I should share with her so that I don't do it. And then when it comes to my lesson, like we get to the end of the lesson and I'm like, you know, hold on, let me look at my list of weird shit. And then I look at it and I'm like, no, I don't want to have this conversation about any of these things. So then I just move.
That's great. I'm you're doing a great job setting boundaries and I just want to applaud you for it.
Thank you. It's a pretty good thing. Although last week I don't remember how this came up in our lesson, but we ended up talking about astrology and
okay.
I told her that a friend of mine is really into astrology, which is true. And I said she spent months trying to get me to find out my birth time so she could do my star chart, which I didn't know. I had to like get from my mother. And my Japanese teacher is like, ooh, can I give you my birth time? Like, will she do my star chart? And so I passed it along. And then at our most recent lesson, I provided her her star chart, which ooh. She was very excited about.
Yeah, so. That's a service, you know. That's that like is. You can get compensated for that shit.
What I definitely don't do, just so everyone is clear, is I don't ask her to like translate things for me. Like, here's this Japanese wrestling thing. Will you translate it, please? That seems rude.
I think so. Translation work is, you know, difficult and should be compensated correctly.
Of course. If I ever did, I would pay her for it. Okay, Matt Hardy and Private Party versus Matt Sydal and Top Flight. We're going to get an update from Miro and Chuck the Butler, and Jon Moxley is going to be in action. So that's your show for January 20th. So make sure that you're following us on Twitter. You get to see retweets like the Shida Tube video that only I watched, apparently. That's at Everything AEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate is at Epitasis. Mike is at Fuji Heya. Subscribe to the podcast. Give us a 5-star rating and a review. And please support the show by going to patreon.com/everythingelite and subscribing and going to MyBookie and using the promo code ELITE. That's it for Mike, for Nate. I'm Aaron. We'll see you next week.